This is Ozarks at Large for Wednesday, November 27th, 2013. I'm Antoinette Grajeda.
And I'm Christina Thomas. Ozarks at Large is underwritten in part by the Walton Family Charitable Support Foundation.
Ahead on this edition of Ozarks, Roby Brock from our content partner Talk Business Arkansas has a conversation with the CEO of Arkansas Children's Hospital. Plus, after Fayetteville residents voted yes, yes, yes in a recent special election, we find out what's next for the projects those bonds will finance.
And we experiment with a new smartphone app that selects a color palette based on a specific song.
But first, the Razorback football team will be playing fewer games in the state's capital. The University of Arkansas and Little Rock's War Memorial Stadium held a press conference yesterday to announce changes to their contract. The Razorbacks will now play one game per year in Little Rock instead of the previously scheduled two. The contract also extends an extra 2 years through the 2018 season. Though the university will save money through the new agreement, UA Athletics Director Jeff Long says the decision is based on scheduling issues, not money.
You know, I think approximately when you figure in everything all considered, you know, it'll be about between $900,000 and $1 million more to our revenues. But I do want to say that was not the focus of our conversations and our partnership. It was really trying to solve these scheduling issues that we have, and it really wasn't financially motivated at all.
Long says other non-athletic events must also be considered when scheduling, and two games per year was becoming difficult to manage. In addition, he says fan attendance is important in both Fayetteville and at War Memorial Stadium.
The home field advantage is very important to a football team, so having a packed stadium, creating that crowd noise is important too. Whether we're playing on campus or here at War Memorial Stadium, that's important to us. So, you know, we're going to continue to encourage our fans to come out and work with Kevin in the future to bring more fans to War Memorial Stadium. So I think that's part of our partnership that we'll work on going forward.
Part of the agreement includes the University of Arkansas paying War Memorial Stadium $400,000 for the next 3 years in order to offset expected revenue from previously scheduled games.
About a year before Election Day, a new poll shows the race for governor of Arkansas is very tight among party frontrunners. Roby Brock with Talk Business Arkansas says the survey was conducted by a firm that primarily works with Democrats, but is considered reputable.
The Mike Ross campaign released to some of its heavy fundraising contributors a poll that shows that the race is virtually a dead heat. It shows Asa Hutchinson with 46% of the support, 44% for Mike Ross. This is from 800 respondents in the poll. That is statistically a dead heat and shows that this governor's race is very competitive, like many of the other polls that we've seen, both public and private, that have come to the forefront.
A couple of other points. Hutchinson, who has run three statewide elections, leads in name recognition 76-60. But among those surveyed and familiar with both, Ross leads by 9 points.
The U.S. military has a sizable impact on the Northwest Arkansas economy. According to the City Wire, a new report by the Northwest Arkansas Council puts the U.S. military's impact on the area's economy at more than $150 million. The Veterans Health Care System of the Ozarks represents much of that economic impact, with more than $134 million going toward annual payroll for the health system, which includes the VA hospital in Fayetteville and six community health clinics. $33 million annually also comes from the Veterans Health Administration for veterans to receive medical services at non-affiliated hospitals. In addition to healthcare-related impacts, the Arkansas National Guard in Benton and Washington counties spends $31 million annually on operational costs, and roughly 7% of the two counties' population is military veterans. As recognition of the military presence in the area, the Northwest Arkansas Council has invited the Arkansas National Guard's 142nd Fires Brigade to join the council.
Northwest Arkansas natives are likely already aware of the employment growth in the metro area during the past several years. Now, the United States Conference of Mayors is taking notice. In its report on metro area economies, the Northwest Arkansas metro area, which includes Washington, Benton, and Madison counties in Arkansas, and McDonald County, Missouri, was ranked sixth in terms of total non-farm employment growth rates. According to the report, Northwest Arkansas grew 4.2% from 2012 to 2013, While the report listed the Midland, Texas metro area as the fastest growing metro, with 36.3% year-over-year employment growth. In terms of employment growth projections for 2014, the two metro areas are tied for third place at 3.4% behind Myrtle Beach, South Carolina, and Naples, Marco Island, Florida.
Razorback Transit in Fayetteville will be changing one of its routes starting next week. On Monday, the TAN route will have an additional bus driving afternoon hours on weekdays in an attempt to improve on-time performance while navigating traffic and congestion along Weddington Drive. The adjustment means full-service buses will run every 18 minutes between 7 and 11 a.m., every 34 minutes from 11 a.m. to 1:20 p.m., and every 18 minutes from 2:20 p.m. to 6 o'clock.
Two officials with area colleges are receiving recognition for serving their respective institutions. Mark Horn, Vice Chancellor for University Relations at the University of Arkansas Fort Smith, has been given the Lifetime Membership Award by the Arkansas Association of College and University Business Officers. Horn was presented the award in appreciation of dedicated service and outstanding leadership in Arkansas higher education for more than a decade. Horn has been with the college in various administrative roles since 1992 and plans to retire in June. Meanwhile, Mary Hatfield Lowe, the coordinator for the Northwest Arkansas Community College's American Bar Association approved paralegal studies program, has been elected to the American Association for Paralegal Education Board of Directors. Lowe will be director for the organization's South Central region. The association is the nation's largest and continually operating organization dedicated to promoting quality paralegal education and has more than 400 member institutions.
Cleared tonight with lows from 17 in northwest Arkansas to 20 in the Arkansas River Valley. Sunny with highs around 50 degrees tomorrow, but wind chill values will be between 7 and 17 degrees early in northwest Arkansas. Expect mostly clear conditions tomorrow night with lows from 20 in northwest Arkansas to 25 in the Arkansas River Valley.
Arkansas Children's Hospital is the state's only pediatric-specific hospital, and for most of the last two decades, the hospital was led by CEO Jonathan Bates. This year, Bates retired from the post, and Arkansas native Marcy Doderer was named the new CEO. She takes the helm at ACH at a tumultuous time for healthcare. Last week, Roby Brock from our content partner Talk Business Arkansas talked to her about how changes in healthcare might affect the hospital and what it's like to follow a CEO who was something of a leadership icon in the Arkansas healthcare industry.
I have an amazing opportunity, though, to walk into a very strong organization with history of tremendous leadership. Dr. Bates set a great stage for me, so I don't have to fully follow in his footsteps. I've got a strong organization and can help take it to the next level. What I've done in my first 100 days is really spend a lot of time listening to people, learning what we've done really well for our first 100 years, understanding where people would like to see us go in the next 100, but maybe at least 5 or 10 on my watch, and understanding how we're going to take it forward. It's a great opportunity to be in a place that's not in crisis mode, mm-hmm. not a turnaround. We can build on what's already there.
That is a good place to be in. So tell me, maybe give me a hint or two of something that you have already kind of picked up on that you think may be an initiative you want to pursue.
There's a couple of things I would say are top of mind for Arkansas Children's Hospital right now. First is about improving healthcare for kids in our state. When we look at how Arkansas ranks in the world of children's healthcare for outcomes, we don't do so great. We're number 40 out of 50. And I believe Arkansas Children's Hospital has an opportunity to impact that with some of our programs that get out into the state, mm-hmm. our dental sealant program, our health teacher program, things we do to really improve healthcare for kids in their homes and in their home community. So we hope to raise the ranking of Arkansas nationally. But we also hope to hit the national charts with respect to children's hospitals. So the U.S. News and World Report ranks children's hospitals every year, the 50 top hospitals. We are not in the ranking today. Our team wants to be, though, and we think we're one of the best kept secrets in Arkansas. We do amazing things every day.
Let's talk about some of the challenges that you're getting to deal with in healthcare. You've touched on a few things already, but I think the biggest thing is we've got this looming January 1st deadline for the private option here in Arkansas. You've also got just the whole other aspects of the Affordable Care Act. It's not been a good month for the Affordable Care Act when you look at the month of November. So maybe tell me, what are some of the challenges that you're dealing with in terms of implementation of that and where you see some opportunities?
So as the Affordable Care Act rolls out, we're all learning as we go because the big law was passed, but not all the rules were written, and we're learning. There were some great things that happened for kids through the Affordable Care Act, staying on their parents' insurance till they're 26, not having lifetime maximum coverage agreements, eliminating pre-existing conditions as a reason to exclude a child. Those are all great things. Arkansas has really made the national stage with our private option, a great bipartisan approach to expand coverage, mainly for adults. We have a strong Medicaid program for kids here, and the Our Kids First program helps those children as well. Private option will first address adults. We, though, as Arkansas Children's Hospital, are playing a role in that. We have certified financial counselors on our team. They've been certified and trained by the state to help families enroll in the private option. What we believe, the reason we want to do that, we think if parents are on a health insurance product, if they can take care of their own health, they're much more likely to take care of the health of their kids. So it's a good thing for kids.
Are you seeing some early numbers in these in the enrollment that you guys have some sort of control over?
I must admit I'm hearing mixed numbers, but I did get some communication out of the Arkansas Hospital Association just yesterday that over 50,000 Arkansans have enrolled already. So they'll be ready to go in January.
Those are good numbers.
Which is a good number.
I think another trend that we have covered a lot at Talk Business has been just kind of this effort for more transparency in the healthcare process. In short, to empower people with more consumerism to understand what they're buying, what they're getting, what they need in terms of healthcare coverage. Do you see that as a trend of something that we're going to see more of that in the coming years?
Absolutely. I think as the insurance market, the financing of healthcare puts more in the hands of the consumer, more responsibility and more accountability. The consumer is going to demand understanding who has the best care, who has the cheapest care, what will my outcomes be, what does my service look like. And so hospitals have an obligation to put that information out there. So we're learning how to do that. It's been a sheltered environment and sheltered industry for a long time, but we're publicly sharing our patient satisfaction data. We're publicly sharing clinical outcomes data. So if you walk our halls, you'll see our data in the units where patients, where families, where reporters could see it.
Give me an example of what I would see if I was maybe looking for a particular service or a particular surgery.
So say you had a child born with congenital heart disease, mm-hmm. and you were trying to find the best place to take your baby to have series of surgeries because that child will need care for many, many years. If you were to look at Arkansas Children's Hospital, you could find our overall mortality rate for kids with congenital heart disease. Actually, if you were in the CVICU, the intensive care unit where these kids are cared for, you'd see how many days it had been since our last catheter-associated blood infection. Several other quality indicators that we post out there so people will know this is really a great place to bring a child born with a heart problem.
Does healthcare reform, does it make your job more challenging, more difficult, or does it give you the option, I guess, or maybe the opportunity to be more creative and to do something more dynamic versus the way the system's been for years and years, if not decades?
Yes and yes and yes. I mean, it certainly is making it a little more complex. It's becoming a much more highly regulated industry, which adds a level of complexity. But I think it is forcing us to think about how we do care differently, how we deliver it differently. I was meeting with a group of staff just this morning talking about how are we going to take care of well kids differently, more efficiently, bringing the parent in as a partner in that care, helping coordinate that care, keep them out of the emergency room, keep them out of the hospital. So we have to be very creative about how we're going to do it. The dollar is not going to grow, but the number of kids is. Mm-hmm. And so we've got to figure out how do you take care of more kids with less money and do it much more effectively.
Marcy Doderer is the CEO of Arkansas Children's Hospital in Little Rock, the state's only pediatric-specific hospital. She talked to Roby Brock from our content partner Talk Business Arkansas last week. Support for Talk Business Arkansas on Ozarks at Large is provided by Mitchell Williams Law, providing diverse professional experience to clients across the U.S. Mitchell Williams Law Firm employs nearly 80 attorneys at offices in Arkansas, Texas, and New York. Online at MitchellWilliamsLaw.com.
And Bank of the Ozarks. committed to helping business owners succeed by combining the tools and services businesses need with accessible experience and knowledge. More information at bankozarks.com. And the Electric Cooperatives of Arkansas. Diversity is the key to reliability and affordability. From the state's largest industrial user to a home at the end of a long country road, the Electric Cooperatives of Arkansas serve members with a stable supply of electricity backed up with fuel diversity. Coal, oil, natural gas, hydropower, and renewables. More at AECC.com.
This week in This American Life, turkeys.
It's pecking the car. It's pissed.
Scary, scary turkeys.
It is attacking the car.
Feral turkeys.
911, the sheriff's department.
The local police are up here shooting our turkeys, and they've got my husband tied up. They have him handcuffed because he was trying to get him to stop shooting our turkeys.
Humans and birds collide this week.
Listen Sunday at 10 a.m. to KUAF.
This is Ozarks at Large. On November 12th, Fayetteville residents participated in a special election. It resulted in voters deciding to issue $1.5 million in bonds to repay the remaining town center debt, $6.9 million to help fund Walton Arts Center expansions, and $3.5 million to help build a regional park. To find out what's next, earlier this week, I invited Park Planning Superintendent Allison Jumper and Walton Arts Center President and CEO Peter Lane to the Furman Garner Performance Studio. One of the first questions I asked was what was Allison and Peter's reactions when they learned Fayetteville residents had voted to issue these bonds?
Yahoo!
Exciting! Let's go! That's what we thought. Let's go. Let's get this thing going.
Okay. It was a great start. It's a great platform for us, and I think for all of us, because it really spoke, I think, about what this community cares about, its passions. I think it bought into a lot of people realize and recognize that the Walton Arts Center and those other assets in our community, like our parks, are important for quality of life. And so our vision for how we see the Arts Center growing and what we see for all the other amenities are critical to what we expect in our community. And so I think it was a good start, and now we have a lot more work to do, but it was very exciting for many of us.
A lot more work. So what comes next? Now you've been promised all this money. What happens now?
We have to work for it. I mean, we have another $16 million to raise, in our case, for the expansion of our Dixon Street facility. So we move right into what we call the quiet phase of the fundraising, which is where we work with our various development consultants and team members and board members to secure the larger gifts and the commitments, and then move eventually into the public phase probably a year from now. So that's where a lot of the heavy lifting and our energy immediately goes to.
And what will the public phase be like?
Typically for us, what we do is we try to get about 80% of the commitment. So, you know, we'll try to get 80% of the $23 million up front, and then move to the part in the campaign where we're a little bit more asking everybody to be involved. But right now, on one track, we're fundraising, and on another track, we're trying to move the design process along. We've just finished what we call schematic design and moving into design development. So now we know we want a door in a certain spot. We now need to figure out what kind of door and whether is the knob going to be on the right side or the left side, and that kind of thing.
All the little details.
All the details, exactly.
And what about you, Allison? What's next for you guys?
Well, likewise, we will also begin to raise funds for the future plans of the park. We have about another $20 million to raise, but now that we have the eight secured, then we are starting with finalizing our master plan. We have a consultant on board, and they are currently working on that. So we're moving ahead, and we're hoping to be able to start construction by the end of next year. So we need to get those soccer fields built and get a place for our kids to play.
Now, did you have any funds already saved up going into this?
We did. We had about $4.5 million sitting ready to go. It was HMR funding, so that's there. And then the $3.5 million was a great boost. We're hoping to be able to build the $8 million that we have secured will build the soccer fields, baseball, up to three baseball fields, large playground, a large open multi-use area and a pavilion, and then, of course, all the utilities and infrastructure. But we're hoping to be able to raise enough money so that we can go ahead and build out the baseball complex completely. So that's our closest focus.
So what are you guys looking to do for the fundraise as you fundraise more? You know, he mentioned going to private people and the kind of the quiet phase, mm-hmm. and then public. What will you guys do similar?
We'll be doing something very similar. Yes. Yep.
Will you guys look into anything, grants or anything?
We will. We certainly will. There's a grant that we typically apply for through Arkansas Parks and Tourism, and it's for outdoor recreation. So we'll be looking at that probably next year.
And Peter?
We have a great base. You know, there's over 1,000 people who give to the Walton Arts Center every year, and we raise half of our revenue every year through fundraising. So we have a lot of very interested folks who care passionately about the Arts Center and want to see it succeed, and we'll be involved in some way, shape, or form. When we look at $23 million, we divide it generally into a third public support from the city, a third from foundations, and a third from individuals. So that's the general outline of what we have from that perspective. And on the constructability side, it's really a unique challenge. When you renovate an existing facility that is at a 95% capacity, one thing that you don't want to do is disrupt the programs and services that you offer. So when you look at all the Broadway and the theater and the jazz and the dance and the education programs, we want to be able to continue to do that while we're in renovation. So our schedule is to next summer pull back and close for a month or so, so we can do the majority of the demolition and construction and then move towards and do the front of house work, all the amenities that affect the public, continue to do that construction throughout the coming months. Then the following summer, take a little break again. When we close down completely, we can do the demolition back of house and do all of the needed production work, spaces that we want to build in Star Theater. And so we're looking at phasing it over 2 years, but being able to have a site where you can have construction and concerts at the same time. It'll be dusty occasionally in the corners, but our hope is that we can keep the Arts Center absolutely full and cranking on all those great programs we all expect, but at the same time be able to move towards getting this completed.
Well, now that you guys have secured these funds from the bonds, how does that work? Will that be paid all at once, or is there a set amount over the next couple of years? Does anybody know?
That is one of the meetings we're hoping to get further clarity on with the administration upcoming soon. But we certainly hope they write the check tomorrow. I'm not sure that will be the case, but it certainly will be well spent.
So that's another next important step is sitting down and figuring out how that gets paid to you.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the details are kind of key.
Details are key. Can I have a couple of details on your individual projects? I'll start with you, Allison. Can you give me a couple of details about the sports complex that you guys are building out on Cato Springs?
Mm-hmm. Sure, yeah. The first phase that we'll be focusing on, as I mentioned, will contain about six natural turf soccer fields, as well as approximately 10-acre multi-use lawn that can be used for pickup games or concerts, anything that's just sort of a active or passive recreation really there, as well as baseball fields, three baseball fields, and a concession area, all of the associated parking, lighting, playground, pavilion. So we're trying to build a little bit of everything to get started so that everyone has something to do when they're there. It's not just necessarily a sports park, but there'll be other amenities there to keep people active while their kids are playing.
How long do you think this might take you guys?
Construction-wise, we're probably looking at around a year. We won't get started until, probably close to the end of next year. And I imagine it'll take about a 12-month construction period to get that going.
Okay. And Peter?
Well, you've been to a show. You might have recently come to White Christmas as a sellout. And we know when you go into the lobby, it's crowded. So the first thing is we're going to bump out the lobby, create more area for concessions and just lobby space, add more restrooms. We have inside the hall some technical upgrades we really need to do, some ADA compliance issues, technical upgrades to the lighting system, We may have to do a little bit of work on some insulation work that has to be done. And then we'll move to Star Theater. We're going to double that size and change the orientation of the room. And then back of house, we're woefully short on space and basically storage area. So that'll be the next phase of that. And then at some point in there, when the city builds the parking deck, they'll need to use where our current offices are, and so we'll be putting new offices back there as well. So those are sort of how we sort of all the pieces that need to get kind of dealt with over the course of the next couple months. The piece for me, though, that is really exciting is that when we did the study, we know that our community is looking for places to have special events, more programs. There are lots of arts organizations that currently can't come to the Walton Arts Center, and our current resident companies want to grow and do more. And so we think that between the front of house and the back of house changes, as well as Star Theater, we're going to be able to accommodate a lot more activities in general, which is a great boon to Dixon Street, but also our entertainment district and our city as a whole.
So it's important to have these types of projects because it does benefit the community, so it benefits a lot of people. But what prompted you guys to take on these certain projects? I mean, you could argue that it's expensive and it's a lot of work. And so you could argue, well, like the Walton Arts Center, you guys have a system for dealing with the space that you have. You've come up with a system. It works. You know, parks, there are parks out there. You're serving the community. You can change times and fill more dates, things like that. And I guess that might be the cheaper way to do it because it doesn't mean knocking something down or digging up something to construct it. So what prompted you to be like, okay, this is what we need to do. We need to do it now.
I think I'm going to jump in here.
Yeah.
I'm going to answer that by saying one word, growth. I think when you look at this community, we are growing like crazy. And people have a higher and higher expectation for what our services are going to be as an organization. And whether it's a public citizen who loves to ride the bikes on the trails or use the parks or come to arts events, the growth is, and our audiences have demanded that we provide more of these opportunities. At a 95% capacity, we hit the wall quite some time ago. And for the Walton Arts Center's perspective, we need facility growth to be able to grow as an organization and continue to meet the needs of our region and our citizens. They're demanding more. We want to offer more, but we can't without facility growth. And so part of the strategy is a multi-campus strategy. We have to fix our cornerstone facility at the Walton Arts Center on Dixon Street. That will always remain the cornerstone of what we do. The AMP is our contemporary rock venue that creates revenue to support those programs and services that we do. And long term, we have plans for a larger hall.
And I would add to that, our project really stemmed from the community. And it came out of a master plan process that was started back in 2000. And so the community came forward and said, we would like to see recreation in one area so that we don't have to drive, you know, to two or three different places around town to take our kids to sporting events or to hit a trail that we'd really like to ride or walk. So ours came from the community, not to say that our programs aren't growing, because they are. And, you know, we do need additional facilities. But I think one of the primary reasons was to get it all in one area. So a family might come to the park and spend the entire day there. You know, they may have tournament games during a Saturday. Mom and dad can go for a walk. They can go to the playgrounds, maybe take their older kid to get on a zip line. So we're trying to offer more of a destination area that someone could spend an entire day there. And it's certainly having facilities that we can host larger tournaments will bring, obviously, more funding into the area. So that's definitely a plus. But I would like to emphasize, I guess, that the community really brought it up and it came out of a public process.
And how much space do you guys have to work with?
We have 200 acres out there.
200 acres.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And was that something you purchased or was that donated? Or
it was actually donated, yeah. It has the land itself has quite a history, and it's actually came out of a public-private partnership that was advertised during the previous administration, and the real estate economy, kind of didn't really produce as we thought it would back in 2008, and the property ended up with Chambers Bank, and they graciously went ahead and donated the land to us, as was in the original contract, so we didn't have to pay a dime for it.
That's excellent. Mm-hmm. That's always nice.
Yeah, very exciting for us to get free land, yeah.
All right, well, tons of things to look forward to here in Fayetteville. Do you guys have anything else you'd like to add or any final thoughts on the process?
I'm just happy that the community's out there supporting us. We want to be able to build the best facilities that we can and offer a variety of recreation for everyone.
It's really great to be in a community that has such overwhelming support for projects like this. I think it's makes us all very grateful to be working for the organizations that we do when we have that kind of support.
All right. Well, Peter, Allison, thank you so much for your time.
My pleasure. Thank you.
That was Park Planning Superintendent Allison Jumper and Walton Arts Center President and CEO Peter Lane. They stopped by the Furman Garner Performance Studio earlier this week. This is Ozarks at Large. This is Ozarks at Large. I'm Antoinette Grajeda.
I'm Christina Thomas.
Just a reminder that this is free week at the Rogers Activity Center. Through Sunday, December 1st, the center will open its doors to the public for free. Local residents are invited to burn off some of that holiday feast that many are probably enjoying this week or just have some fun. Guests can play a game of volleyball or basketball, walk the track, or use the exercise equipment. If you want to try a class, you can visit rogersarkansas.com/recreation for schedules. Space is limited. All child care programs are excluded from the special, and the center will be closed tomorrow and Friday. The Rogers Activity Center will announce a Christmas special on December 2nd. For more information, you can call 631-0336.
Kind of on that note, I know that a couple of other places are offering kind of open house things. Fayetteville Athletic Club is having open house this week, so guests can go for free and try classes and stuff. Mm-hmm. And the gym that I go to, Clubhouse Fitness, on Friday, guests are welcome.
Perfect.
So
lots of places to work off the turkey and stuffing and mashed potatoes.
Exactly. The Great Ozark and Beard Off is scheduled for this weekend in Eureka Springs. The contest is part of a 3-day festival fundraiser for the Arkansas Prostate Cancer Foundation. Guests are invited to celebrate beer, beards, and men's sexual health. The festival includes live music by Mountain Sprout, a variety of facial hair contests, and a beer parade. Beard parade. More information is available at gobo.eureka.com.
A spring roll fundraiser to help those affected by Typhoon Haiyan is scheduled for Saturday during the Bella Vista Property Owners Association's Holiday Lights Dazzle event at Reardon Hall. Spring rolls will be in pork with vegetable or vegetarian varieties. Spring rolls can be purchased for $1 each, $10 for a dozen, or $20 for 25. The group, known as PR3, which stands for Philippines Relief Rebuild Restore, will be offering the rolls as fully cooked, that's on a first-come, first-served basis, and ready to cook. The group will also be taking cash donations and donations of summer clothing, baby clothing and items, towels and linens, and non-perishable food items. For more information, you can email Mark, that's Mark with a C, at markfhenning@henning.com.
The Holiday Lights Dazzle event we just mentioned is scheduled for 4 to 7 p.m. Saturday at Reardon Hall in Bella Vista. The event will feature crafts for children, carnival games, carolers, pony and carriage rides, a cakewalk, puppet show, and a Making Memories photo booth. Parents can also bring a camera to capture a photo of their children with Santa Claus. Hot dogs and popcorn will be provided by Concordia Catered Living. The lighting of trees and outdoor decor around Reardon Hall is scheduled for 6:30 Saturday evening, and the lights will be on display through January 3rd. A live auction of Christmas wreaths is scheduled for 7 p.m. The event is free and open to the public. However, the POA will be collecting non-perishable food items and financial donations for local pantries. More information is available at bellavistapoa.com.
Rogers Fire and Police Departments and the American Red Cross are hosting a blood drive from 11 a.m. to 3 p.m. December 6th. The Battle of the Badges will take place in the community room of the Rogers Police Department, which is located at 1905 South Dixieland in Rogers. More information is available at 636-4141.
Spey, Arkansas's Fixed for the Holidays program is back for a second year. The program is presented in part by the Mulliken family, their friends and family, as well as the Schmieding Foundation and generous donors. Spey, Arkansas has announced $5 fixes for animals who live in households where the total annual income does not exceed $20,000. The organization is financing this project to $5,000. The appointments must be made and surgeries performed by December 31st. Limit 5 animals per household. More information is available at spayarkansas.org.
Friends of the West Fork Library are hosting a breakfast with Santa from 8 to 11 a.m. Saturday, December 7th at the town's community center. Breakfast includes pancakes, juice, milk, sausage, and coffee. Admission is $4 for adults, $3 for children 4 to 12, and $2 for children younger than 4. Professional photographer Brooke McNeely will be at the event, and guests can purchase a framed print in a folder of their child with Santa for $5. A CD with full printing rights and several images is available for $20. Proceeds will help buy books for the library's children's section. More information is available at 839-2626.
This is Ozarks at Large. I'm Christina Thomas.
And I'm Antoinette Grajeda.
Antoinette, you like music.
I do.
If you're trying to sort of set a mood, I don't know, maybe you're excited. Mm-hmm. Do you listen to a particular type of music?
Yeah, something that's more upbeat and kind of makes me want to dance.
Right. So you can use music to set a mood. Okay. Have you ever thought about using maybe color to set a mood? Maybe the paint on walls?
I've heard that certain colors are good for certain things, but I've never thought of it in that idea like you did with the music.
Well, I came across an app. It's called the Dutch Boy Paint List app for iPhones, and you can also use it for Android. Mm-hmm. And Dutch Boy is a house paint.
Right.
Right. So you can upload one of your favorite songs to this app.
Uh-huh.
And based on that song, it will choose a color palette.
Really?
For your room. So maybe here at the station, if we wanted, you know, to set a sort of atmosphere for our offices, we could, you know, pick a song and
upload one of our favorite songs and see what happens.
Well, I got the idea that maybe we should interview and a painter or maybe a musician about this app and see if they what they thought of it. So I thought of Aaron Lewis, who owns Certa Pro Painters here locally. And as it turns out, his brother, who also works with him at Certa Pro Painters, Alex Lewis, is a jazz guitarist. So kind of worked out a little bit.
Yeah.
I asked Alex, who does more of the residential stuff, you know, what popular colors were this fall. And he said there are a lot of grays for living rooms and stuff, but also oranges and yellows for kitchens and things of that nature. So a lot of bright colors.
Yeah.
Aaron, he says that he sees the trend of going back to gray. Mm-hmm. He agreed with his brother, Alex. But he said that if you're when you're trying to pick a color, you really need to think about what you're trying to achieve.
You know, what mood do you want to create? Because you do get that opportunity. So if you want, in an office, if you want a serious environment, or if you want people to think of you as professional, those grays are great. If you want a more sterile or clean environment, that's where whites are really good. And then, again, you know, have some fun with it. So if you want a more lively environment, color's great. So if you want to have a soothing environment, we did our office in a light green, which is a real soothing color, and that tends to, I think, keep emotions at bay. So,
well, Alex, you mentioned kind of brighter colors in like the kitchen, maybe, you know, like a red or a yellow in a kitchen. What about, do people say that they want a certain kind of vibe for maybe a living room or a bedroom?
Definitely, yeah. I've had some people use dark colors, especially for a bedroom, even just for the, you know, a simple reason to help them sleep. and definitely in the kitchen. You know, some people even the customers have pointed out that yellow or orange would help them become hungry. I've heard that that really works. So some restaurants you'll see there that are yellow and orange, and that's the reason.
I wonder why. I mean,
I don't know.
Okay. So, Alex, you're a musician. How can music, like paint, help set a mood?
You know, even I think to start with, you know, you have the major chord and you have the minor chord. And major to me sounds consonant or happy or harmonious, you know? And so you're getting a happy feeling. And maybe a whole song is completely major, you know? And the same thing with minor chords and minor songs. So to me, you know, we may play a Django Reinhardt swing song, and it may be in a minor key, and it kind of has this drive to it, and it's still fun because of the rhythm, the way he wrote songs, but it's still, you know, it has a little more attitude almost. And then there's love songs that are almost completely major, and you know, maybe the minor chords going into the major chords, the clashing going into more harmonious sounds, helps set a better mood as well, or a more happy mood. So I think that's what I see when I'm in the middle of a song and seeing how it's setting the mood.
Well, you know, you mentioned Django Reinhardt, and that's kind of that's something I like to listen to, like on a Sunday morning.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that mood where you just want to sit around and drink coffee, and I mean, you're upbeat but yet chill.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know. I do. That's one of my Sunday morning favorites. What color would you associate maybe with some of his songs?
You know, I've even heard that there's gifted people that can close their eyes and see colors while music's playing. But, you know, I guess I have those songs too, and those artists that I like to hear those in those relaxing times, you know. I could see a real a sultry love song almost being a red, you know, where I could see maybe something that's real playful and kind of reminds you of springtime. Might be a green or a light blue, something like that. Something very airy and, you know, so that's kind of what I think of.
Aaron, do you have a Sunday morning music?
I do. I listen to bluegrass.
Yeah.
On Sunday mornings.
All right. If you had your breakfast nook where you're sitting there drinking your coffee and reading the paper on a Sunday morning, you know, what color as you're sitting there listening to your bluegrass, what color would you paint your breakfast nook or maybe your den where you're sitting in a comfy chair?
Good question. I think probably green, a light green or a light blue. Definitely light colors.
Yeah.
Soothing colors, natural colors, you know, something we'd see in the natural environment. I think that may be why I like to listen to bluegrass on Sunday mornings. It's just really relaxed, and you know, I can think about being outside, and because usually when we go to listen to bluegrass, it's an outdoor environment. So,
well, let's see. Do you want to try out the Dutch Boy app? So I just kind of randomly picked a couple of my new favorite songs, and also some old favorites. So you can. It's just you have the Dutch Boy guy. And you can use your library. I haven't tried using the. And you just pick a song. And I'm just going to kind of pick a, well, maybe not so random, but one of those that makes me want to, like, get up and dance a little bit. Puts me in a good mood. So maybe we'll just kind of listen to it for a second, and the app will work, and you guys can kind of give your, what you think, what colors you would pick, and then we'll see what the app does and if you agree with it or not. So.
Sounds great.
All right. Here we go. One song.
Woke up cold one Tuesday. I'm looking tired and feeling quite sick. I felt like there was something missing in my day-to-day life. So I quickly opened the wardrobe, pulled out some jeans and a t-shirt.
To me, I think orange for me.
See, that's the way I would, that's what I would say. I mean, because I like that song. And like I said, it makes me want to get up and dance. But here, I'll kind of let you guys it offers you three different choices. So if you just kind of.
Yeah. That's neat.
Is there a blue?
There's a blue.
That's what I would have said.
There's kind of like an orange, mm-hmm. and then there's green and an off-white, and there's some blues and a gray. I don't get gray though, you know.
Yeah, I don't get gray at all. I don't understand why.
And it's about waking up and things, right?
Yeah.
The song, the lyrics are.
Yeah, exactly.
That was a good one. I liked that one.
Yeah, what was that song?
Paolo Nutini, New Shoes.
I totally use music for whatever mood I'm trying to create, you know.
Mm-hmm.
If I'm going to the gym, it's going to be rap or electronic or house music. And then if I'm home, you know, like I said, bluegrass, maybe even country. If I'm out hanging out, playing golf, you know. So I go all the way across the board.
Oh, for sure.
Yeah.
As a jazz guitarist, do you pretty much just listen to jazz, or do you have I listen to everything kind of?
I'm pretty partial right now. You know, I think it takes a lot of listening to be a good jazz musician. But I have a background of everything, you know, and I've played pretty much every genre.
Yeah.
But I was just thinking it'd be cool to, if someone really heard about this, it'd be neat if they picked their favorite song and then they put whatever colors it recommended. What if they really liked it in their living room or whatever, you know?
I think even better than the app, what if you listened to your favorite song and then thought about what color that made you feel and then painted that?
Just based on, your gut feeling as opposed to,
That would be cool.
Yeah. I don't know if this is incredibly upbeat because I was listening to it after yoga the other day, but it's my new kind of electronic favorite.
I'm just curious. I can't imagine what electronic would color you would.
For me, that I listen to it after yoga, and so it's kind of blues and stuff for me.
Mm-hmm.
But what did y'all think?
I see white on that song for some reason.
And I'm with you. I'm with the more soothing colors.
Mm-hmm.
Like that to me, even though it's got a lot of bass and there's a lot of rhythm there, it's still pretty soothing to me. So yeah, I'm thinking like gray, light gray, maybe light green. Blue, more natural colors again.
Yeah.
Which is not what I would have thought I would have associated. I thought I would have not. That's almost the same thing I said for bluegrass, so it's kind of strange.
Right. Two completely different types of music.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, it chose, you said white, Alex, and it chose sort of this tan color, but then with a white and sort of a pink for an accent, mm-hmm. which that's not my gut, but I kind of like that
mm-hmm.
with that song, actually, now that I'm seeing it. And then that was sort of what my gut was, but I like the other one better, actually. This is sort of a dark teal with a tan and maybe a lighter blue. Yeah. All right. Thanks for playing. Do you want to play a song, Alex, since you brought your guitar?
This one is called Stompin' at the Savoy.
I'm seeing a green and maybe like a not orange, bright orange, but like a burnt orange maybe. And maybe it's just because you said stomping at the Savoy, and like for some reason that kind of the title of the song kind of gives me a kind of darker orange feel. Not brown, but not bright orange either. Am I making sense?
I was thinking orange.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Okay.
We connected on that one. I was thinking orange, too. And yeah. I was thinking of kind of a lively orange, not bright, but with, like, a real bold orange. Mm-hmm.
All right. So. What kind of mood?
I think it's definitely meant to be a fun song, yeah. You know? It was a 1930s dance song. So that makes sense to me.
So I saw you Friday evening playing at Greenhouse Grill. So Greenhouse Grill, big open place. Primary color there is bright green. There's also sort of dark wood. People are there trying to have, you know, they're having dinner. It's Friday evening. Some people are probably drinking wine or a cocktail, visiting with friends, family. What kind of music do you play in that atmosphere?
We always try to start out with something fun, you know, kind of not fast because you don't want to stress diners out, but definitely a fun atmosphere and never too loud, but kind of, so we may start out with like a really bright sounding and kind of medium tempo song that's kind of like light and happy, you know. And as the night progresses, you know, maybe toward the end of the night, a lot of times more people are on dates and they have two tops with a bottle of wine in between them. And that's a good time to play love songs, slow love songs, you know. When there's a lot of people in there, it's a great time for us to sing, you know. So that's a lot of fun. And we get good response from the crowd whenever we sing when there's a lot of people there. And the party at, you know, sometimes there's parties going on, birthday parties and things like that. So we may play, a lot of people like the bossa nova rhythm, you know, and that kind of makes it more fun too.
Yeah. Favorite song and favorite color.
I should have been prepared for that.
Alex?
My favorite color is green and, my favorite song, it changes often as a jazz lover. My favorite song right now would be Days of Wine and Roses.
Brothers Aaron and Alex Lewis, owners and operators of Serta Pro Painters in Northwest Arkansas. The two amused my curiosity of music, paint, and moods by using the Dutch Boy Paint List app for my iPhone inside the Furman Garner Performance Studio. This is Ozarks at Large.
I'm Robin Young. Next time on Here and Now, what's going on with garment factories in Bangladesh after several devastating fires and hundreds of deaths? Are they any safer? Are Western companies pushing them to improve conditions? We'll get a report card. Next time on Here and Now from NPR and WBUR Boston.
Here and Now, coming up next here on KUAF 91.3 FM. Ozarks at Large is sponsored in part by the University of Arkansas Women's Giving Circle, whose mission is to transform and expand women's giving to university programs and research through a collective voice.
A listener-supported service of the Department of Journalism in the Fulbright College of Arts and Sciences at the University of Arkansas, this is KUAF 91.3 FM, Fayetteville, Fort Smith, Rogers, and Spring Valley.
Where's Spring Valley?
It is on 412.
Okay.
Actually, I was on my way to Eureka Springs last weekend and saw a sign for Spring Valley.
Okay.
So, yeah, it's on 412, somewhere in between Fayetteville and Eureka Springs.
Fair enough. Well, you have to go very far and for Thanksgiving tomorrow?
Next door. Yeah, my mom lives next door, so I'll be going next door.
I'm not going very far either. Right. We're very fortunate that way. Well, looking forward to Thanksgiving. If you are tuned in to Ozarks at Large tomorrow at noon or again at 7, we will have a new edition of Ozarks at Large for you for your Thanksgiving, maybe while you're cooking in the kitchen. Christina, you have a story about a cocktail.
Holiday cocktails, mm-hmm. Yes, two of them. So
excellent.
So
looking forward to that. Mm-hmm. And I will... maybe people will want to make those this weekend.
I hope they will. Yeah, that was kind of the plan. Yeah.
Excellent. Yeah. And I'll have a preview of some of the small Saturday events happening this weekend. Ozarks at Large is a production of KUAF. I'm Antoinette Grajeda.
I'm Christina Thomas.
Thanks so much for listening and have a happy Wednesday.